Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, October 9th, 2015. It's just after 2 UTC as we're recording this. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Yo, I'm here. Was I here last week?
Yes, you were. You were here last week. It was 2 weeks ago that you were missing. Of course, you're got that whole, you know, mind-going thing, so you don't remember anything anymore.
I've been, like, traveling a lot more than I, you know.
Are you actually at home this week?
I am. I will not be home next week, but I am here next week. As a matter of fact, I should probably say, like, right now, actually, at the time to record the show next week, you should probably ask for co-host right now. I will be on a plane.
Well, we can talk about this separately.
Yes, but
so, not while we're going. Okay.
But pause. Yeah, it's just that my life has turned back into when we started this podcast. Gosh, what year was it? 2006.
It's been 8 years. Yeah.
8 years or 2007, whenever it was. Well, I mean, I was traveling all the time. It was not uncommon that Sam and I, that I would be like, you know, doing this from some remote location, like on a very, very regular basis. And you know, we did that all the time. And now it's so we spent a period of time where my travel just completely ceased. So I was not going anywhere, basically. So I was available all the time, and now it's gotten back up to where shit. I don't know. I'm on the road all the time. And it's honestly, I kind of got used to not traveling. It's kind of annoying at this point. I'm getting too old for this shit. I mean, right now, if I want to travel, honestly, I mean, really, ideally, I'd like a private jet. I'd like somebody to just fucking, like, just trot me over there and just, you know, fucking, like, just parade me around and bring me back. Otherwise, really, I would just like to stay at home.
I would generally like to stay at home. I mean, I generally do stay at home. I had a brief period many years ago now for about a year and a half where travel was a significant portion of my job. Never as much as you, but I was traveling like a couple times a month. And I realized very quickly that while I don't mind travel so much if it's like for fun with my family, business travel sucks. And I don't enjoy it.
I'm not going to say that business travel sucks so much, but it's just, honestly, the main thing right now is that I have a son that's at home. Yep. And to be honest with you, when I'm gone, I'm not there.
Yeah.
And I just don't really like that.
No, I feel you entirely. Like the
you know,
I haven't had to, you know, I haven't left home all that many times, you know, but when I have, I definitely feel the fact that I am not at home with my kids.
Yeah, so I think that's really it for the most part. You know, honestly, it would be cool if I could take them all the time on some of my business trips.
That's hard logistically, I would think, though. But yeah.
I'm thinking, you know, he's a little small right now, but I will tell you this, that in the future, if I can, you know, fuck it. I'm going to pull him on a business trip. Say, I'm going to go on a trip like a couple of weeks from now for San Francisco. Screw it. He's coming with me to San Francisco. Next time, if he's older, he's coming with me to San Francisco. The hell with that. I was like, come on, pack your bags. We're going. Come on, let's go. Whatever. I mean, what the hell? So what? I'm going to be at, that'll be good because I'll record the show from San Francisco. I will be at the Oracle Open World, like, technology event, participating over there. And, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't care. I'll freaking drag him to the convention. He probably, you know, he loves, like, technology. He'll probably, you know, he'll love that.
Well, there you go. So,
you know. Yeah, I mean, so yeah, I mean, in the future when he's older, I'll probably sneak him out and I'll just say, screw it. Oh, come on, let's go. I'm like, whatever, you know, just employees are going to complain. Oh, it's a little kid with me, deal. Look, he's playing over there with his iPad. He's paying attention. Give me a break. You know, just whatever. I'm like, I like having him around.
So we do have an agenda for today.
Yeah, we do.
We're going to talk about Russia and Syria. Yep. We're going to talk about the craziness around the Speaker of the House race, which just sort of exploded into chaos in the last 12 hours or so before we're recording this. And, of course, we'll do our regular update on election 2016, and we'll finish it up with a lightning round. So,
okay.
So there you go. That's the plan for today. And let's see, aside from that stuff, I mean, yeah, I'll save my other stuff for the lightning round. No reason to, like, extend this opening period any longer. I don't have anything exciting. And, you know, we've already heard about Yvonne on travel.
Yeah.
So, we'll be back after this. And we're back. Now, during the break, I reminded Yvonne that next week is the Democratic debate.
Yes.
And that we really want to do that. So we're going to try to see if we can do this recording a day earlier than we usually do. But, you know,
we'll have something out, like, you know, close to, like, so you're not, like, you know, waiting for it, like, a bazillion days after the debate was done.
But, yeah, I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But we're going to try.
We're going to try. Yes.
Okay. Syria and Russia.
So I guess Putin, you know, Putin started firing like cruise missiles. Like, he's honestly, you know, to a certain extent, I started thinking he's acting like the U.S.
Well, I mean, he's got fighter jets going. He's got cruise missiles going. You know, he's basically, you know, and the thing that people have been complaining about, there are a couple of things, of course. And I think we might have touched on this last week, but the one, you know, he says, oh, yeah, I'll help fight ISIS. But what's really going on is he's fighting anybody who's against Assad, basically.
Right.
And concentrating.
And the other thing is,
and concentrating on the non-ISIS ones, because ISIS isn't really the big threat to Assad right now. The other quote unquote rebels are. But one thing I noticed in the coverage, which I was amused by, is there were so many places, and this is not exclusive, but lots of places, they have their little maps, and they'd say, here's the regime forces, here's ISIS, and here's the rebels. The rebels. Like, that's their name. Like, you know, because in fact, you know, there is no the rebels. There's a whole bunch of different groups, one of which is al-Nusra Front, which is al-Qaeda. Right. One of which is another little group that's supported by the... They're like a bunch of these. And yes, one of the ones that Putin has been bombing is one of the ones that we've been covertly supporting ourselves. But the bottom line is, you know, Putin's kind of made it clear. He's like, I'm fighting the terrorists. And by the way, how do I define terrorists? Anybody who's against Assad.
Right.
You know, and maybe it's not completely explicit, which, but come
which
on,
I think
that's
it's,
what it is.
Listen, it's this is what Assad wants.
Yeah.
Right. I think his strategy has been he wants the West to back him because he's not ISIS.
Yeah.
Or al-Qaeda, right? I think that's the whole thing. So now another thing that I was reading about this is that Putin is doing this because you know, he's been going around waving his dick at everybody, trying to show how big it is. Okay, Russia is, oh, yeah, we're very powerful. We're the big almighty. Yeah, look how big it is. You know, like, whatever. You know, because that's what he's doing, right? But at the same time that he's been doing this, I'm understanding from an article I was reading in The Economist, which was titled An Odd Way to Make Friends. So you guys can look at it on The Current Economist, where part of it is, he's drawing down from the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Because he can't continue to do that fucking Ukraine shit anymore. He can't afford it anymore. So he figured this is a way to get attention. Okay. And you know, and the whole thing is to act like Russia is America's equal. Here we are. We have our fleet. It launches cruise missiles. We have planes. You know, and all this shit. And I didn't realize, you know, it's kind of funny to me. I'm like, I guess, you know, you have ships that carry cruise missiles like floating around the Caspian Sea. I mean, the Caspian Sea doesn't go anywhere anyway. What the fuck is that all about? I mean, really? I mean, it's like having like ships in a fucking bathtub.
Okay.
Well, I mean, don't you, I mean, I don't know. Why would you have a whole bunch of ships carrying fucking cruise missiles? I thought it was the Black Sea Fleet that they had, but then I realized that if you can't, they couldn't fire the damn missiles from the Black Sea, they would have to go over Turkey.
Well, the Turks are already
super pissed off at them. I think that launching cruise missiles over the country, that would have fucking like set them, Jesus, that would have set them, you know, that would have been far more dangerous. So they shot them over Iran, which apparently didn't work out all that well either, because Russian cruise missiles, unlike ours, kind of apparently suck.
From the Caspian to Syria, they have to go over both Iran and Iraq.
And Iraq,
Or Iran and Turkey, or Azerbaijan and some others. But, you know, I was under the impression some of these might have flown over Turkey as well. But the main
maps, none of the maps that I've seen, and I'm looking at a couple like right now, show that they went over Turkey. Yeah. They actually purposely avoided going.
Well, because Iran is also supporting Assad, so you'd think they probably have a tacit agreement from them.
Yes,
and that's northern Iraq. I mean, who's going to do shit?
Right. You know? Exactly. So, but apparently their cruise missiles kind of suck, I guess, because they kept crashing into Iran, I guess.
Apparently, a couple have at least.
Yeah, you know. So, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I think, look, this is like, you know, we're talking about in the article I mentioned, they were mentioning how, for example, they're in the news, as you know. I mean, the government in Russia controls the news. So they have been like given wall to wall coverage to this, you know. They've been showing like, I mean, even like they said, They showed like all these videos of the jets roaring past the camera, and like they had all, I don't know if you saw some of the videos where they're showing like the missiles being launched with like cameras right on the ships showing the missiles being launched. And they said that even like the weather forecast in Russia, they were talking about how the weather was great for flying and like, you know, bombing the Syrians. I mean, it's like, so now it seems like he's using it definitely as a propaganda engine, you know, in the middle of the fact that the Russian economy is like right now contracting by like 10%. And so he's launching like missiles, let's say. So like 26 of those missiles, they usually cost about $1 million a piece to launch one of those fuckers. So, you know, it's just, you know, so I think they said they launched 26 cruise missiles. So he spent about $30 million just to, you know, I don't know, just to show probably a lot more to show how great and mighty we are. Yes, we're Russia. We got missiles.
And in the meantime, they're backing up the airstrikes are backing up ground defenses by Assad folks. There's at least some reports that the Iranians might be doing something on the ground too. There are reports that the Russians might end up doing something on the ground as well. We'll see. There apparently been at least one incident so far where an American plane had to change its flight path to avoid a Russian plane. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's there's a lot going on there in a very compressed space. With a lot of different,
a lot of combatants.
I certainly don't understand all of the different factions there, or even a fraction of the factions there. I mean, you know, because they're literally, you know, dozens. Is dozens correct?
I think so at this point. You know, yeah.
I mean, there are probably four or five major ones, but then there are lots and lots of small ones. It's all chaotic.
You've got all the different little groups. You've got the Iranians, you got the Iraqis, you got the Turks, you got the Syrians, you got the Russians, you got the Americans. Shit, just by saying those, I'm up to eight. And I know that I haven't mentioned all the little groups.
Yeah. And so now, One of the things that, and we'll save the presidential election till later, but Trump actually was one of the ones who said, basically echoed what we said last week, is that, hell, if the Russians want to, you know, bomb these folks and get involved in this morass and we don't have to, let them.
Well, Trump is right. I mean, to be honest with you, look,
Trump is right.
For once, Trump is right. Look, the reality is that there was a cartoon, also The Economist, which is hilarious, that I posted on my Twitter account this week, which had Obama standing on top of a tank, exhausted, and it read something like Putin on another standing on another tank saying to Obama. You've been over there for 15 years in a quagmire, never ending. Now it's Russia's turn. And I'm like, fuck, let him at it. Listen, look, Russia had their shot at this. They spent like 50, over a dozen years in Afghanistan. How did that turn out? Okay, not very well for the Russians. Look at the Chechen War, for God's sakes. I mean, how long did that go on? Okay.
Is it over yet?
Probably not. Putin wants to go in there and fucking act like he's that strong. Let him have it. It's retarded.
Yeah. I mean, look, I look at this as there are a couple different possible outcomes here. First of all, like we've said repeatedly here, whenever you add new weapons and new arms into a situation, more likely than not, you're just going to end up making it last longer and more people dead.
Yeah.
So if that happens, that's sad. The other part of it is, okay, Russia gets bogged down in this mess for years. Okay, that sort of distracts, like you said, it's like, they moves their energy away from Ukraine and other places they could be making trouble, I guess. Or the other is, hey, it goes awesome for Russia. They destroy ISIS. They destroy Al-Qaeda. They bring peace to Syria. And okay, Assad's still in charge.
I'm holding my breath now.
Isn't that
what they say? Don't hold your breath.
Yeah,
but I'm gonna hold my breath. Give me a fucking break on that one.
But I mean, even if that happened, is that so bad?
What are the chances of that really happening?
I would give that a low. Whenever you throw outside fuel into these kinds of things, it just makes it go on longer than it would otherwise.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yes. You got that right. I mean, Jesus Christ. Talk about major powers in this. And I'm going to include medium to major.
Yeah.
Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Russia, the U.S.
Israel.
For God's sakes.
You already mentioned the Russians. Accidentally, some of their missiles went awry and landed in Iran. Well, Iran's, quote unquote, on the same side here, so they'll be pissed a little bit, but, they'll get along.
As long as they didn't kill anybody, they'll be.
But if they accidentally, one of their missiles went into Turkey or Israel.
Fuck! You imagine that clusterfuck?
Yeah. I mean... And you, it's tempting to say, oh, well, come on, they're going to be careful. But they just put some missiles in Iran.
Technology has been crap forever, for God's sakes.
And I'm not saying they would do it on purpose.
No, it's just that their missiles are half-assed. It's reality.
And meanwhile, I know we're doing some light-level coordination to try to avoid this. But, you accidentally get some sort of situation where the American and the Russian forces get into a clash. Or with one of the proxies, there's so many places where this could go wrong in a bad way.
Oh my God, this is like the nightmare of like scenarios of like, shit, how many places do you want it to go wrong? Let me just count the ways. I just get a headache thinking about it.
And you just have to end up crossing your fingers and think, okay.
Exactly.
Or even if it does, you hope that everybody will take a step back, take a deep breath, and say, okay, we know it was an accident.
Russia. I think that between Russia and the U.S., they probably will, to be honest with you. Okay, all right. But are you going to guarantee that, say, between, like, I don't know, the Turks are going to fucking take it lightly and a whole bunch of cruise missile crash into their territory? I mean, they're not going to launch a fucking airstrike against the fucking ships and just fucking sink them just for the hell of it. They do have F-16s. If they could, if they wanted to, fucking just sink the fuckers.
Well, the one thing that gives you, like, some hope in those kind of situations is if you remember in Gulf War I, when Saddam was throwing Scud missiles all over the place, trying to get people to escalate and get involved, specifically Israel, but I think there were a couple other places, you know.
Yeah, nobody did, but the reality is that we had so much overwhelming firepower arrayed against Saddam that it was like anybody added anything, it was like throwing a match into a fucking gasoline inferno. You know, I mean, whatever. It's, we were bombing him with everything we had. Okay, that's not the case here. Okay, you know, this is a low-level skirmish on a relative basis in which, you know, people are throwing just fucking like lobbing shit and stuff and whatever. And if one of these morons, you know, the Russians go and they've got like they keep launching like cruise missiles, which honestly, I will say, they're probably they don't have that big an arsenal of cruise missiles. I don't know how many millions of more dollars Putin wants to spend on fucking launching cruise missiles, to be honest with you. It gets kind of pricey after a while. But say he launches another 50 or 75 or 100 of these things, okay? Spend another 100 million. I mean, what the fuck anyway, right? You know, it's like, you know, what's 100 million amongst friends? What if a whole bunch of these land over there? I don't know. Or hit Israel or by accident or some shit like that. Then what? You think Netanyahu's not going to take it lightly?
I think even Netanyahu, if it was an accident, would recognize that escalation was counterproductive in that case.
He's such a hothead, though.
He is a hothead, but, you know, there's a difference between Syria making an intentional attack on Israel and Russia accidentally missing Syria and hitting Israel.
Well, look, if it happens, we'll find out what the hell the damn reaction's going to be now, won't we?
Yeah, I guess we will, but I mean...
Something's going to happen.
And in the meantime, by the way, I've seen estimates that say, you know, we were talking about the Syrian refugee situation for a few weeks, and I've seen estimates that this kind of involvement, this kind of escalation could potentially double the number of refugees coming out of Syria. Because in the meantime, while you've got all of these, you know, superpower proxies, rebel groups, terrorist groups, all of what, fighting each other, in the background behind these are all the innocent civilians who don't want a part of any of this shit and just want to live their lives, who are, you know, in the middle of this war zone and getting killed left and right. You know, it's not like the Russians are, you know, being careful enough so that they're not getting any civilians either. And Assad certainly hasn't been. He's been killing civilians left and right. I mean, that's part of the problem here, you know. And so it's just a huge mess. It's been a huge mess for years now. And we stopped talking about it for a while because the only thing to say was, yep, it's still a mess. But now we've got escalation in that mess, which is not the right direction. But
not particularly, no. But you know what? Look, this is going to get a lot worse right
before
now.
It gets better.
Oh, yeah. We're nowhere near the bottom.
And despite, like, you know, what some people on the right are, like, pounding their fists about, I hope Obama has the sense to just say, okay, let's just... the Russians are in there right now. Let's just back off a little bit.
He's not going to do it. He didn't do it before. He's not going to do it now.
Well, no.
One thing that I have.
There was a lot of covert stuff going on in there. We were doing bombing. We were doing this.
Some stuff. But you know what? Listen, if there's one thing
that
Obama
has avoided.
I'm hoping we're
backing off even that part.
And Obama is like smartly backed off. It's like some ridiculously large scale military intervention in there. And he didn't do it. You know, even when we thought he was going to do it, he didn't. And it was the right call. Because what it would have done, just it's a fucking quagmire.
And I think the right call now is to take what involvement we do have and just cut it off. Say,
I think it's just right.
The Russians are in there now. It's not going to serve our interests to try to be in there at the same time. It's just risky for no good reason because our efforts weren't being particularly successful anyway.
I think all we can do is like help the people who we have committed to help. And when I talk about that, I talk about the Iraqi government, okay? All right? The Kurds, those kinds of people, logistically, Turkey, who we have an alliance with. You know, in terms of honoring those agreements and helping the best we can, help the refugees as best as possible. I know about.
I care about that last refugees. One more than any of the other groups you mentioned.
I agree, but well, I'm sorry, but the Kurds live there.
I know.
Want them to be in a situation where they turn into refugees as well? At this point, I'm like, no. I mean, you need to make sure that the conflict doesn't spill into their areas to make sure that their territory is safe.
And you've got the additional dynamic once you start talking about Kurds. You've got Kurds in Syria. You've got Kurds in Iraq. Yes, you've got Kurds in Iran, and you've got Kurds in Turkey. And meanwhile, there are all kinds of reports about the Turkish government cracking down on their Kurd minority.
I know, they have always been very, you know, treating very poorly for a very long period of time. But I think that, look, the people who are safe right now, what I need to stay safe as best as possible, and we need to help the refugees. I mean, there's just not much else that we can do.
But meanwhile, you have things like, Hillary Clinton called for a no-fly zone in Syria. It's like, really?
Oh, God, how are we going to enforce that?
Well, obviously, we shoot down the Russian planes.
Oh, genius idea. that'll cause no problems.
Yeah, no, I think Obama is actually fairly on track here from what I know publicly of what he's doing, which is very little. Which I think is the right answer.
But if you look at what's, you know.
There may be crazy covert stuff going on that I wouldn't agree with, but
But at least what is visible right now that is being done, the right call at this point. You know, amazingly, we can agree. Trump was right.
I feel like I'm going to be ill or something.
I know. I realize that. But yes, it is reality.
Okay, let's take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about what's next. Oh, the Speaker of the House race. We'll be back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, we are back. We talked a little bit about this last week. Bonnier resigned. Or announced that he would be resigning. And then we were talking about how it looked like Kevin McCarthy was the natural next in line, and it looked like he was going to do that, get that fairly easily. There were going to be some folks on the right who threw up a little protest, but he would probably win. And we mentioned that he'd made his little comment about the Benghazi committee really being about reducing Hillary Clinton's polls.
Which we knew was...
Yeah.
True. I mean, unless you're an idiot. I mean, you know, you knew that was the truth.
So anyway, we mentioned that statement had happened, but it continued to blow up. Hillary Clinton started hammering on that fact, and all kinds of people kept saying it, and people in the Republican Party were like, how could you say that? Of course it's not about that. We just want to find the truth. And meanwhile, the House Freedom Caucus. Is that what they're called? The Freedom Caucus, right?
I think that's what they call themselves, yes.
Which has approximately 40 members in it, although apparently the membership is secret, so you don't know exactly who's in it and who's not.
Yeah, because because we are for open government and for freedom, but we don't want you to know who we are.
Anyway, they announced that they would vote in a block.
How do we know what the block is? If it's secret?
Well, I guess we would find out at that point. But look, there are two stages to the way the speaker is elected. Traditionally, there's one that is the sort of formal requirement. Well, anyway, first step is the party in charge, the party with the majority, votes within their own caucus on who they want their candidate for speaker to be. And then traditionally, whoever wins that, when they go to vote in front of the full House with the Republicans and Democrats there, everybody in the party votes for the same person, whether or not they voted for them in that first round. They sort of
now,
all agree.
I have this question.
Yes.
Okay. If no party has a majority, could the minority propose somebody?
Well, no. Well, what happens is the actual election that happens on the House floor is anybody who wants to be nominated for House Speaker is nominated. You vote for whoever you want. If there is no majority, you vote again, and you vote again. And the House is not allowed to do any other business until a new speaker is elected. And so apparently the last time there was a multiple ballot situation for Speaker of the House was sometime in the 1920s.
Yeah.
And it took like 4 or 5 days. I forget the details. I just glanced at it earlier to come up with a speaker. Because basically then you just have between each vote, you have all kinds of lobbying. You have people trying to make deals. You have this kind of stuff. Now, the tradition, though, since then has been what I mentioned. You've got two parties in government, each one within their own caucus, votes for a candidate, and then they all together vote for whoever they agreed within the caucus, which means that whoever's got the majority gets their speaker, done deal, single ballot, no questions asked. Now, what was happening here is the Freedom Caucus was threatening that even after the vote happened within the Republican caucus, if they didn't get somebody they liked, and they indicated they did not like Kevin McCarthy, they would vote for their own preferred candidate as a block in the election in front of the whole House. Mm-hmm. And the result of that would be that nobody had a majority. And you would have to go to a second or third or fourth ballot on the House floor to figure out what to do.
Okay.
And basically what happened today was McCarthy said, they had their initial vote. McCarthy won it, but not with enough to get to the majority of the entire House. You need 218 votes. He had something less than that. And then he surprised everybody by saying, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah.
And now there are some rumors that have been flying all day that it wasn't just about the math of the numbers, but there was also rumors that he was about to be exposed as having an affair with another House member. You hadn't heard that?
No, I didn't hear that part.
There's no proof of anything, but rumors were flying about the fact that he was having an affair with a female House member. And that this was going to get exposed, and that he needed to resign to prevent that from becoming public. Blah blah blah. But everybody I've mentioned who's mentioned it has also mentioned this is pure rumor. No one has presented any proof of anything whatsoever, and it's unclear the provenance of the rumor. So who the hell knows whether it's true or not? And maybe it didn't even matter if it was true or not, because once people were whispering about it, effectively it acted as if it was true, even if it wasn't. Bottom line is he's like, regardless whether he was having an affair, whether he wasn't, the math wasn't there. And if the Freedom Caucus really was saying that they aren't going to go along with the winner in the Republican caucus, and they're going to vote on their own as their own independent block, then you don't end up with a majority. And so he's like, we want somebody that can get to 218. It looks like I'm not that guy. I'm out.
Right.
And he shocked everybody. Like, apparently he essentially told nobody before this. I think he gave Bonnier like a 30-second heads up or something like that before he did it.
Jesus Christ.
As late as an hour before his announcement that he was out, he was still actively campaigning for the spot. And so they delayed the vote within the Republican caucus. They may be delaying the vote within the entire House. Speaker Bonnier came out and basically said, look, I'll stay on until they can agree on a replacement. Which may be...
He had said that originally. That's what he had said, but...
But at this point, that may mean he's there for months and months and months.
At this point, yeah, I mean...
There are a couple things, and I'll mention the boring one first, and then we'll get into some of the interesting ones. The boring one is apparently, even though he had taken his name out of consideration earlier and had been very adamant that he doesn't want the job, there's a heavy lobbying effort to try to get Paul Ryan to take the
job. Yeah, a number of people, and I've heard that, and he's kept saying no. But here's my question.
But apparently, like, he canceled a whole bunch of fundraising events over the next couple days. He is talking to his wife about it, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a possibility that under the pressure, I mean, basically everybody's come to him and say, I know you don't want the job, but we need you. You're the only one who can potentially get enough of the Freedom Caucus to go along to have a majority of 218 and make this a clean result. Yes,
stay
Alex.
Stay up here until I say it's
okay. Okay, I'll stay up here. Yes. Anyway, so the boring result here is, you know, tomorrow, before I even get this podcast published, probably, Ryan comes out and says, I'm running. Everybody gets behind him. And then Ryan's the next speaker with nothing interesting happening. That's the boring result. The more interesting results are we don't get anybody that the Republicans can all agree on and get to 218 with. And so we have a situation where we do get to the actual election for the Speaker of the House with, you know, maybe 190 to 200 Republicans voting for one guy, 30-something to 40 Republicans voting for another guy, and then the Democrats, and nobody has a majority. And then you get into deal-making. So all kinds of things have been floated today. I'll start with the two that I floated, which I think are fun, but very unlikely given the current climate. One is we do something with like the UK model, where they get a non-partisan speaker.
Yeah, bad chance of that.
Yeah, so like, exactly. I said it's not going to happen, but, you know, I think it would be very, very interesting if you got, you know, basically the Republicans and Democrats to agree to bring in an outsider, because the Speaker of the House does not have to be a member of the body, so they can pick some random Joe off the street, who is known for, you know, fairness and impartiality, and sort of bring in sort of a technocratic carekeeper. What is it? Carekeeper? Whatever. Caretaker. Who basically just promises to be fair to both parties and see what happens. That would completely and totally change the dynamics of the House of Representatives, though, and is unlikely to happen for any number of reasons. The second one that is equally unlikely, but would be a lot of fun, is that you basically have a moderate Republican who gets elected with most of the Republicans and a few Democrats voting for him or her.
I see that.
That's how they've been getting business done anyway. Everything that's actually passed the House.
So I'm like, why wouldn't we? But like you said, and like some people said, this could be the beginning of the end of the Republican Party too.
I mean, that would completely change the dynamics of the House as well, because basically what you'd then have is you would not have a Republican majority. You would have a majority coalition that included some Republicans and some Democrats. And right. in order to make things work, guess what? You'd have to start compromising on shit, because anytime you started being belligerent, the Democrats in that coalition could say, we're going to go away if you don't be reasonable here. And so that's one potential way to break the gridlock here. And of course, the third interesting choice is just make this official, guys. Freedom Caucus, go start the Freedom Party. Don't be Republicans anymore.
Right.
And let's have three parties in the Congress and see where we go. You'd still need to come up with some sort of coalition to get a speaker and move forward.
To get anything done.
But then you'd basically, this is effectively the reality we've had the last few years anyway.
Yeah.
We've had these 40 or so Republican members who don't want to do anything and are all about stop everything. We're not going to do anything unless we get a result that's ideologically pure. And then we've had sort of the regular Republicans, and then we've had the Democrats. And so, hey, make it official. Split the Republican Party. Let's see where we go with this. It almost seems like it's inevitable to happen at some point. Why not now?
Bayer resigned for a reason.
Yes.
Okay. It wasn't because he was old and, he was looking forward to retirement, blah, blah, blah. He was done.
Well, and part of his bullshit. Part of what some people have said about McCarthy is that it wasn't just the math. It wasn't rumors of an affair. It was, as he started to get into it, he's like, this is fucking bullshit.
This is insane. I'm out. Yeah. And forget it.
Now, then we get to some of the other things that have been brought up as trial balloons in the last few hours. Newt Gingrich has said he's available. He's like, hey, if they want me, I'll come back.
He's not in the house.
It doesn't matter. You don't have to be in the house to be the speaker.
Oh, really?
No, you do not have to be a member of the house to be the speaker of the house. You can pick anybody. I did not realize that.
So Gingrich has
volunteered. He said he's available if they want him. There have been some reports that there is a group within the Republican caucus that's looking to draft Romney.
Oh, God, but they try to draft Romney for everything anyway. Hell, I joined a Facebook group that's draft Romney for president. They keep posting shit every day.
Yeah. But anyway, there have been a number of things. There's another group trying to draft Trump to be Speaker of the House.
Yeah, that's going to really fly.
And apparently, did I hear right? You just threw your own name into the ring.
Fuck hell. Don't throw him in. What the hell?
There you go. Because your third
is going to be my office manager.
Yeah, there you go. And you're right after the vice president in line for the presidency.
Holy shit, that's right.
These things usually go the boring way. They'll convince Ryan to do it.
Usually, but this is not business as usual.
No, it is not. It is not.
Look at how the current speaker bowed out. It's not because of a sex scandal or like something, or they lost the majority. Listen, if you tell me what speaker has resigned the way that Bonner is going out.
Well, one way of looking at it is he saw the writing on the wall because this Freedom Caucus was threatening that if he didn't go along with shutting down the government, they were going to do a challenge to his leadership anyway, and we would have ended up in this exact same situation where he wasn't able to get a majority, and he was just like,
right,
"I'm not playing that."
My point is that when does that happen?
No, I know.
Okay, this is not business as usual.
No, it's not. And so, which of these options will play out? Like I said, it usually ends up being the boring way. By the time you're listening to this podcast, we may already know that it is going the boring way. But
I'm gambling.
There are all kinds of these other situations that could be. And so far, the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi had said, I'm sure they'll be able to come up with somebody. She has not offered Democratic help here because it's like, let them burn. The Republican caucus is burning themselves to the ground. Apparently, when McCarthy made his announcement, there were people in the room crying because they couldn't believe it. What was the quote? Was it Representative King came out saying something along the lines of, "This is complete chaos. It's out of control. It's like a banana republic in there." You know, so the Democrats are just like stepping back. You know, pull out the popcorn, let's watch them implode. You know, if push comes to shove and we end up in a situation where you end up with moderate Republicans reaching out to Democrats for a coalition, you know, that is the end of the Republican Party, effectively. I mean, at least in the House, because what's going to happen, you know, this Freedom Coalition, do you think they're going to be happy doing things with those Republicans going forward? They'll be like, no, you sold us out.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you might as well make it official. Come on. We've got, in the House right now, we've got a three parties situation going on. That is the reality of what's happening here. And it would be so much fun. Just make it official. You know, you even run a candidate for president if you want, you know, although that can come later. But, you know, come on, it's a mess here. It's going to get worse unless they, you know, they draft Ryan and he's like, OK, I'll do it. And then we move on or we get one of these weird outsider caretakers. There are a lot of people talking about a caretaker speaker who won't be there for very long, who just needs to be there long enough to, you know, get him through the next cycle of deadlines and things that have to happen, and then they'll figure it out again later.
Well,
or get him to 2016 anyway, to the election maybe at worst, you know. Anyway, fun stuff to watch.
Fun, woohoo! This is like, I mean, I will admit, you know, most of these things never have any drama. This is about the best drama that we've gotten on something like this in a long time. Okay, all right. So, pretty exciting, I will tell you.
It's
going to be pretty interesting.
So, let's take a break. And
now, if it does go like the traditional way, like you said, it's going to be really disappointing.
Yeah, that's probably the most likely scenario, to be honest. Ryan doesn't want it, but a number of people are pointing out that when you get to the point where your party leadership is coming to you and basically begging you and saying your party needs you.
Are even those guys going to support Ryan?
Well, the party leadership probably will, but the thing is with Ryan...
Yeah, but if the Freedom Coalition says no to Ryan too, then what?
Well, what they're gambling on is Ryan has enough sort of conservative bona fides, as it were, that they think they could get enough of the Freedom Coalition to get over to
these. I don't think Ryan is crazy enough for these assholes.
You may be right.
We'll see.
You may be right. We'll see. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the presidential race. Back after this.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook!
Hey, do you want to help support Curmudgeon's Corner? Well, right now, the best way is through Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook and you actually, well, like us, then go search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook and like our page. It will help you see when we announce new episodes, and it'll help us reach more new people too. If you like a particular episode, like our episode announcement post too, or share it with your friends. All of this helps spread the word about our podcast to more people who might like it as well. And of course, we love having a conversation with all of you listeners, so please use Facebook to leave comments on the shows, give us suggestions, or anything else like that. It's always great to hear from you. So, if you want to help the show, use Facebook. Or forget all of that and just send us money.
Okay, we are back. So, election 2016. The first thing I wanted to do before we talk about anything else is I'll plug my own stuff. on electiongraphs.com, but also on abelsmay.com. I did a blog post today, which is linked to from electiongraphs.com, but is in the latest set of polls, a very significant milestone happened for the first time since I've been tracking this stuff in November, which is the latest polls flipped the average in Pennsylvania to a Rubio win in Pennsylvania, which in turn flipped the Electoral College, where if everybody wins all the states they're ahead in, Rubio wins over Clinton by 2 electoral votes. and this is the first time that's happened. And it's just continuing a trend. If you look at all of the best polled candidate combinations that I track, so I tend to talk about the 5 candidates who've had the most substantial polling in the close states. I use a metric to calculate that, blah, blah, blah. And of those, Rubio in the last couple months has been skyrocketing on all. Excuse me, on almost all his metrics. He's been improving his expected, his best case.
He may be the guy to lead a coalition. He may be the guy.
Rubio may be the guy. And Bush has been right behind him. So Bush is not doing quite as well as Rubio, but he's right behind him. The others that are best polled right now, Paul, Walker, Christie, have been not moving that much lately, but also, to be honest, people aren't polling them very much anymore. Walker, of course, has actually dropped out.
Right.
Paul and Christie are both doing very badly in the polls, so they're not getting much traction. The folks that you hear people talk about all the time at this point have a little bit... The polling is not as substantial, so I haven't talked about him yet. But just to briefly mention, Clinton is still beating Trump, but in his best case scenario, they're enough close states that winning is within the realm of possibility for Trump, according to current polling. Carson is actually ahead. If you look at his averages, he actually beats Clinton by more than Rubio does.
Wow.
Which, I mean, this polling is very sparse. A lot of this is based on previous elections. There just is the reason I don't talk about these guys usually is because compared to Bush and Rubio, there just hasn't been all that much polling. So it's really dicey making any judgments on it. But what polling there has been, they've been doing pretty well. Fiorina... in the expected case here, same thing, not very much, not enough polling to really make a good judgment, but she's in her expected case, she's losing to Clinton by 2 electoral votes. So basically
but I think this shows really more, to be honest, it's a weakness, you know, of Fiorina. Yeah, Fiorina. Fuck it. Why do I, Clinton. God. I'm sorry. It's just sorry, Clinton.
Yeah.
Okay. Where she has just weakened herself so much.
Yeah.
You know.
And so basically any Republicans who are still getting polled regularly, and like I said, yeah, folks like Paul and Christie. Sorry, you're just not getting the polling love recently. But anybody who's still being polled regularly, you know, she gets weaker and weaker and weaker as the weeks go on. And
it's just, she's doing so terribly in front of everybody. I mean, every time I see her on TV, it's because she's doing something looking like shit. Okay? I mean, it's really pathetic.
She did go on Saturday Night Live last week.
Yes, she did. I did not see that, though.
I watched the clip. It was okay.
And?
It was okay. Nothing
but
special.
But you see, that's the problem. It was just okay. That was about one of your best opportunities to show that you're not a robot, for God's sakes. And fuck, you could do it.
And she laughed at herself a little. It wasn't a disaster.
But it wasn't great.
No, it wasn't. But, you know, look... And polling is even sparser. Like if you start looking at Biden versus Rubio or Sanders versus Rubio or things like that. So it's unclear that they're any better. But if, yeah, look, the bottom line is Clinton has been imploding since the spring. And yep. really imploding in the last 2 months, since July. Since July has been when the real meltdown was. I mean, she wasn't, she's every move, almost every move has been against her since like April or May. But since July, it's just been very rapid against specifically Bush and Rubio. Like I said, against these others, it's either the trend isn't as clear or the polling just really isn't enough there on a state level to make a good judgment. But bottom line is she's you can't. I mean, we always expected that she would not be able to hold up to the levels that she had a year ago when she was known as, you know, she was the Secretary of State. She wasn't political. People weren't coming after her yet. Never expected those levels to continue. But the degree to which she has been hurt in these last few months in these general election polls is remarkable. And, you know, and you know, she's not fighting it yet. I mean, I don't. She's not coming out in a way that is like.
Well, it's not that she's not trying to. It's just that she sucks at it.
Yeah, I guess so. And of course, you see this. And before we move on to the primaries, let me just plug it again. If you're not already following, follow like election graphs on Facebook. And you can go find the links to all the most recent posts there, or go to electiongraphs.com, and there's a little widget on the front of recent posts for the analysis. It's also in the header menu. You can look at it. And, of course, you can look at all the graphs and charts and everything else like that. The most recent post that I'm referring to that has all kinds of details of this latest change was published on October 8th and is Pennsylvania flips Rubio now ahead of Clinton. Because, you know, This is the first time where one of these highly polled candidates is actually ahead of Clinton.
Right.
But I don't think it's going to be the last time. I don't think she's hit bottom yet. And again, when you...
And now, by the way, she could improve.
She could.
I'm not saying that she...
And people have pointed out that this has been in her Senate campaign, even in her 2008 campaign... Every time she started out very rusty with all kinds of problems, and then at some point she hits her stride and starts doing a lot better. And
but so far she doesn't know what the stride is. I don't know what the hell. I mean, it's just like honestly to me. I mean, to be blunt, she's got her head up her ass about everything. it's just the whole thing. All right. She's being so obtuse about the issues that are attacking her. She's not managing to convey a positive message. Now she is like going on the mega pandering like campaign. Now I am like going to be against everything Obama is. Like that's the problem. The people want to like really reject all that. I mean, shit. It's like, I mean, I'm like, I don't know. She's gone from one pander to another. And she, and then, you know, with that fucking angry face on a regular basis, who the fuck's going to vote for her?
Are we really going to end up with Sanders versus Trump?
No.
Oh, God. That, you know, because if everybody wants the authenticity and all this kind of stuff, well, I mean, there you go.
There you go. I don't think so. I don't think so. But at some point, she's got to... I mean, at some point, either Biden jumps in, because one of the things today that the opening that she is giving Biden is that she is, like, not wanting to be the carrier of the Obama mantle.
Right.
Right? So, if you
and
do that...
And he does.
And he does.
He's happy to be that carrier.
Fuck yeah! Absolutely, 100%. So, if she's going to be doing that, then that gives an incredibly big opening for somebody to get in there to be that. Bernie Sanders doesn't want to be that.
Nope, that's not Bernie.
No, that's not Bernie. And that's not Hillary. Now, you get somebody that says, I want to carry forward Obama's mantle. You know what? that's a big group of support there.
Yeah. And so let's, you know, before we hit other individual issues, let's do talk the primaries. So since we were talking about the Democrats in the national, again, looking at Real Clear Politics like we usually do, I used to like Pollster better for all these kinds of things, but ever since Pollster got bought by Huffington Post.
Oh, my God. It's just awful. It's awful. It's useless.
It's hard to get to what you want.
Yeah, it's useless. Useless crap.
Like, I mean, the actual analysis, if you can dig deep enough into the site to find what the hell you want, is actually still really good. And I follow some of the people on Twitter who are behind that data.
But they've made it, like, I mean, they've made it just
it's just harder to use. Like, it's harder to get the information you want, see what you want, and get in and get out. And it was much better when they were independent. And anyway, whatever. You know, I realized, like, you know, hey, if somebody came and offered me a shitload of cash for my election stuff, I'm not saying I wouldn't take it.
Yeah, we'll take, even doesn't have to be a shitload. We'll take a modest sum.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. So I understand that
if they came over and they said, Sam, we're going to buy your site $100,000. We're going to give you a $20,000 a year consulting contract.
I would have a really hard time saying no to that.
You say it doesn't have to be a shitload of money.
Yeah, but you know, at the same time, I would feel sad about it. But I'd be like, if I lost editorial control, you know.
No, but you're $20,000, you're going to be a consultant.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, nobody's going to offer me that. But
I'm negotiating out here. I'm throwing out the numbers. There you go.
There you go. I will consider offers. I bring them my way. But anyway, I just wanted to go on that rant because I like Pollster. But I end up at RCP all the time just because it's easier to get there, see the stuff, and get out. Anyway, we've kind of had a static situation the last couple weeks. I mean, the Clinton trend is still downward, but she's up a little bit in the last thing. Sanders is down a little bit. Biden is down a little bit. So I guess, but, you know, Clinton's still ahead by 16. You know. Where would Biden go if he got in? Open question. Right now, he's got the benefit of the doubt. All kinds of people are voting for him because he's still the outsider who's not a he's not running right now. He's not in the mix. He's not really doing this kind of stuff. If he was actually running, he'd get more negative attention too. I mean, there was already that article this week saying that, oh, he's the one who leaked the story about his son begging him to run on his deathbed, which honestly, that's what I thought all along, but he's denied it now. And there's, you know, a lot of people were taking that negatively of look how cynical he is. But you'd see a lot more, you know, anti-Biden stuff if he actually jumped in. So I don't know. Would he automatically jump straight to second place? Would he be rivaling Clinton for number one?
I gotta be overnight? Honest. I think he would be rivaling for number one, like off the bat. I do think so because of, look at how weak she has gotten, like, right now.
Yeah.
Really do.
And you know, we mentioned we're going to try to do the first Democratic debate next week. I am dying to see what the polls look like a week after that debate. Biden or no Biden? Because what's going to happen is all of a sudden these other non-Clinton folks are going to be real. We're going to get Webb, O'Malley, and Chafee, who've had zero attention so far, will probably at least get some little spike. I'm not saying they're going to jump to 15% or anything, but they'll get some little spike because people will be like, oh, there really is a person there. And if with her and Sanders on the same stage, if she doesn't come off well in that comparison, we could get Sanders beating her in the national polls.
It's possible. Yeah, I'm not going to discount it, you know?
I mean, so a lot is going to depend on how does that go. I mean, when we first started talking about these debates, like, months and months and months ago, we were like, yeah, all she has to do is be polite to the other people, and she'll be fine. But now, she's so weak, and she's so damaged. It's a higher bar than that now. Because people are going to be looking for these other guys, and are looking for any excuse to look at one of these other guys. And if Sanders or Webb or O'Malley or Chafee come across well in the debate, they're going to get a boost out of that, and Hillary is going to be damaged further by the fact that there's a competition. Now, she's probably still the front runner, but it gets a lot harder going forward. This is not just, Hillary and everybody else, oh, well, don't pay attention to them. The fact that they're sitting on a stage with her will get some attention, and if she comes across the same way she has in all of these other interactions that we've been talking about for the last couple months, she's going to damage herself further in the debate.
Well, and it did make a change. There is a significant event happening next Tuesday. It's that debate.
Yeah.
And her performance at that debate could probably make significant change in what people's attitudes of her are. I mean, other candidates, look what that bitch, Carly Fiorina, did with her debate. So she could significantly alter people's perceptions of her at that debate.
Potentially in either direction. She could gain some direction of this ground that she's lost if she puts in a really good... Or just
completely fuck herself.
Yeah.
Taking somebody... because we know she gets angry about all these damn questions. If she gets even worse about him up there in front of everybody, jeez.
Meanwhile, Biden's still playing his will he or won't he game.
Listen, if I were Biden, I'd wait until after that debate to make a decision.
Well, when they just announced the schedule for the rest of the Democratic debates. And there are only going to be three Democratic debates, and the next one is not until after Iowa.
Perfect!
So it's in February, and then there's one in March. It's
beautiful. I would wait to see what happens at the debate, and then I make a decision.
Yeah. He's already indicated it through folks that he's still making up his mind, but he's not going to try to be in the debate. He's not preparing for the debate. It's only a few days away. And he could shock everybody by announcing 24 hours before the debate that he's in, which would be amusing as hell. But I think you're right. The smart thing to do is for him to hang on and wait as long as humanly possible, because the time for him to jump in is when Hillary is already as weak as she can get, and she is still going down.
Right. And the thing is that many people have said that candidates that jump in late don't do well. But you know what? Acting vice presidents don't normally aren't the guys jumping in late. They're in it usually.
Right.
Okay. Already. Either they're in or they're out. Okay. Like Gore, for example, or Cheney, who was out.
Yeah.
Or like, what was his name? That moron.
He's been mentioned for Speaker of the House as well, by the way.
Cheney?
Yeah.
Darth Vader? Yeah. Great. Okay. Herbert Walker's, like, moron sidekick. What was his name?
Quayle?
Oh, Quayle! Right. We knew Quayle wasn't running. He's a moron. Okay, we knew he was never going to run, but we knew Bush. We knew Bush Senior was. He was in from the beginning. This scenario of an acting vice president jumping in late. I mean, as far as I remember, I don't recall this. This is not normal. I mean, it's like, if you're talking about some little senator from over there or whatever, jumping in late or whatever, then yeah, but this is, or like, we're talking like, what was the scenarios used to be like when Clinton was running, Clinton, Bill, Cuomo jumping in late or whatever, or these other morons, like the Texas governor, the one that keeps like, Perry keeps coming in and out of every campaign, I guess he doesn't. He always sucks. I mean, whatever. Nobody wants him. But this is an unprecedented scenario, is what I'm saying, of being an acting vice president that decided to go late instead of, like, being there already and just at the go. Because usually, I mean, if you're going to be the guy, they decided early. That's been what I've seen. So this could be interesting.
Yep. Okay. Republicans, real quick. So this is also, you know, we've kind of been in a little bit of a freeze since the debates. Trump dropped a little bit, but it's kind of been flat since there. Carson's kind of been flat. Freeman is actually down a little bit from her peak. I know you're upset about that, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I'm just, you know, tingling with like, depression.
Rubio's been kind of flat since the debate. Bush had a jump out of the debate, but has then been heading down again. And then you got everybody else. I mean, honestly, come on. Cruz, Kasich, Huckabee, Christie, Paul, Santorum, whatever, blah. So really what we've got right now, the picture is we've got the three outsiders, Trump, Carson, and Fiorina, that are at the top of the polls, but nobody is really believing can win still. And then we got Rubio and Bush. And so the question is, do either Rubio or Bush manage to sort of break out of the doldrums they're in? It seems like they at least stopped falling. Bush stopped falling for the most part. I mean, he's down a little bit in the last week, but he's still not at his lows. Rubio jumped after that last debate. He's got to be looking for the next debate. And the question still remains. We're still in the summer of Trump. You know, we haven't.
But his numbers keep, like, you know, his averages keep coming down.
Well, as I was saying, he's down from his highs, but it hasn't been plummeting. He's just hanging around in the mid 20s.
But my point is that
22, 23.
At 22%, is he going to win the nomination? The answer is no.
Well, it depends what everybody else does. You know,
here's the thing. There was a poll that I saw recently which showed showing the percentage of Republicans that would consider somebody else other than the candidate their preference, right? And so it showed, like, for example, if the candidate were Rubio, then like 70-some% or whatever would go and say, okay, yeah, I know I liked Kasich. But, you know, if Rubio wins, I'm good with it with him. The lowest percentage among the leaders, guess who had it?
Trump.
Of course. He couldn't muscle over 50, which, like I said, there's no way he can get the nomination when that's the percentages that he's getting from the rest of the Republicans. He is at his peak. These numbers are his numbers. He can't get more than that of the Republican Party. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, I think the 30% was his peak. So his best case scenario, I think, is managing to keep a large enough group to keep somebody else from getting the majority and causing a brokered convention.
Yes.
He does not. I don't think he's got it to win outright, except here's the thing. We do have a lot of contests that are winner take all, and 30% is enough to get all the delegates.
But he's not really, and a lot of them, he's not even getting 30%.
Well, again, it's not 30%. It's if you're getting 22 and the guy behind you is getting 21, in a lot of states, that means you get 100% of the delegates.
You see, the thing is that we're at October. We've already had a number of candidates drop out. I still see more dropping out.
Right. And Trump himself gave a number of interviews in the last couple of weeks that says, hey, look, if my polls are dropping and it doesn't look like I'm going to win, I'm getting out. I'm not going to keep doing this if it looks like a lost battle.
Right.
The thing is, right now, it doesn't look like a lost battle. The question is, does something change? Like, I keep shaking my head. I can't. How long can we last with Trump in number one and Carson in number two and Fiorina in number three? I mean, really?
When is the next Republican debate?
End of the month.
Listen, here's the other part. I mean, the big money spend on trying to get like candidates, like, you know, to get people to vote, still not there. right?
No, we're not even close to that.
No, people are not pounding the airwaves like with all the, you know, all the usual money that they would go in order to get, you know, get their votes. So I have to wait until that part happens. I think that, you know, that's going to make a significant difference in like what the Iowa is going to look like and all those are.
Yeah, I think there are a couple things that need to happen. One, we need to have all the also-rans just get the hell out. Okay.
Yes.
You need Number to stop one. Muddying the water. If you're
done.
Not
get
if,
out.
If you're not in the top five, maybe six. But if you're
done, you're out.
Yeah,
right.
It's time to leave. It's time to pick up your stuff and go home. And I realize not a single vote has been cast, and a lot of people are like, we're gonna wait at least till Iowa. Okay, fine. The tradition is that out of Iowa and New Hampshire, there are three tickets. Basically, you have to win one of those states or come in second to get beyond there. Because certainly, by the time we get to Iowa and New Hampshire, anybody who did not have a good showing in one of those two states, their money dries up instantly and they're done. But that takes us all the way to freaking February. In the meantime, I think we are going to see a bunch of these other guys get out. I mean, there's just no way. I mean,
agreed. They're going to bail.
They're going to start bailing. The problem is the people who are bailing, because they're the ones at the bottom, don't make that much difference to the folks at the top. You know, okay, you redistribute Santorum's 0.6%. Big fucking whoop.
Yes, I know. I got it. Oh, God. But,
you know, so to make a real difference in the race.
No, but there's got to be somebody like, say, and I'm not saying him, but I'm just saying per se, but somebody at the level of a Bush, a Rubio, a Fiorina, one of those guys, just say, I'm going to pull out. I'm giving my support to whomever.
Yeah, and the problem is those are exactly the type of candidates who are not going anywhere till Iowa and New Hampshire.
Right.
Unless something happens before
that. But that means, you know, but like I said, say, for example, listen, almost every Republican, like, nominee has recently, like, lost Iowa. Am I imagining this?
No, you're not.
I'm not. So winning Iowa is not really crucial. Okay, all right?
No. Winning Iowa is not crucial. There's an argument that you still need to come in the top three in Iowa.
Right. But you would have come in the top three in Iowa, but winning Iowa is not like a make or break thing. So I think that if you get one of these guys, this is, you know, think about it this way. It's the standard thing. You get one of these guys like Rubio or somebody like that gets into the top three, right? A guy like Bush doesn't make the top three and says, I'm backing out and I'm going to go and endorse Rubio. Or the reverse happens, okay? Mm-hmm. Bush gets in the top three, and Rubio decides to endorse, right? I mean, that's the kind of dynamics that we just haven't had yet. And the thing is that with this many candidates and this many people, I don't think that we're going to get this shake. At this point, it doesn't look like we're going to get the shakeup that we're looking at until that shit happens.
Yeah, so we may not get that real shakeup until we have voting starting to happen.
I think
you may be right there. But we do have monthly debates from now until then, and they are going to be
Kingdom Come, apparently.
And you will see these movements coming out of these debates. I mean, somebody does really well this time, they go up. Somebody does badly, they go down. And and people are going to start running out of money, you know. Mm-hmm. And
it's already started happening.
Yeah, and even if you're sticking,
and that may be the faster like one that happens, that the money starts drying up for these guys, and they have to do like. These other guys did and said, fucking, listen, I'm done, I'm out. Well, I got to endorse somebody else.
And frankly, I mean, even if you're not out, if you're not making money and spending money, you become invisible. I mean, honestly, how much have we actually seen of Santorum?
I keep forgetting he's in the race.
Right. I mean, or Graham. I mean, seriously. Or Pataki?
I mean, fuck, really? I forgot about Pataki too.
I mean, these people...
I would write, I'll fail miserably an example. Who the hell is in the race? Like, some of these guys are just like, oh, shit, really?
I mean, the people who have been in the JV table debate have essentially been invisible.
Oh, fuck yeah. Other than Fiorina. Everybody else, right?
You know, and so... And I mentioned there were two things. One was people starting to get the hell out. The second is in fact the debates. And when do people start, like, when does the establishment actually throw all their, start actually throwing all their ammo at Trump and Carson and Fiorina? Listen, they've got to be raising cash right now.
You got to start, like, November.
You know who has apparently been making the, you know, lots of money here? Cruz.
Yeah, I hear that. Cruz has been picking up a lot of cash.
So at some point, the Rubios and the Bushes of the world are actually going to go on full on attack mode against Trump, Carson, Fiorina. It hasn't happened yet. There have been some lukewarm attempts, but they haven't really, because they don't know how to do it effectively. It's clear they don't know how to do it effectively.
No, they don't.
Because every attempt they've made has backfired and actually ended up hurting them. So they're keeping their powder dry, hoping that these guys will implode. Because everybody assumes they're going to implode. Like, yeah, there's no end of stupid things Trump said. Carson, this week, was on a roll making, like, a, you know, comments like he made the comment about, like, if he'd been in Oregon when the school shooting happened, you know, he would have rushed the gunner instead of being shot or something.
I love to get back to that stupid debate, the fucking people with that. I just had this discussion with somebody, by the way, that's a little bit unfair.
He didn't say he'd come out of it unscathed. He said, if you're gonna die anyway, you might as well go after the guy, something along those lines.
Well, okay, I will agree actually with that. That's not that crazy. That's not okay. If that's what he said,
that was his clarification anyway. So,
okay, well, that's not that crazy a saying. What I will tell you is that I keep challenging people on the whole gun thing. You know, about the fact. Look, I'm sorry, but I've had a gun put to my head to get something robbed. Listen, at that moment, even if I had a gun, number one, the scenarios were all bad. Okay, if I pulled out a gun, I probably would have never beaten the guy. I probably would have gotten my brains blown out if I tried to react with my gun. Okay, right. That's where I would be, number one. Or number two, but the thing is that you are so scared and nervous that the last thing that you're thinking is about getting into a fucking gunfight with a guy who's got a fucking 357 Magnum to your head. It's a joke. We are not trained Navy SEALs. We haven't been in combat out there with a gun being put head on a regular basis. Your nerves aren't, like, you know, like, gotten to, like, to be that ice cold. The average human who gets out there and somebody is putting a gun to them is going to react in a very frail, scared state. Doesn't matter if they've been to a shooting range and shot the damn gun 100 times. So there, it's like this whole thing that there's going to be this Jack Bauer moat, but people. But anyway, I digress. I'm getting into guns.
Yep. The other Carson statement on guns, just to throw it out there, is he implied that if only the Jews had had guns in Germany before World War II, the Holocaust might not have happened.
Well. Where does he come up with this shit?
The
answer is yes. He's right, but
well, okay. if they had heavy arms and weren't severely outnumbered, and the Germans didn't also have tanks.
He said if they were the only ones that had guns.
No, not the only ones. He's basically saying if Germany didn't have gun control, look.
Does he come up with this shit?
anyway, the other gaffe of this week, which I think was very, very unfair, to be honest. But Bush got a lot of flack for making in comments relating to gun control and the Oregon shooting and things like that. He basically said, hey, look, stuff happens. And a lot of people got on him for that.
How did he say it, I guess, is the question.
The thing is, in context, it wasn't that bad. In context, it was perfectly understandable. Basically, what he was saying is, look, you know, things always happen. Stuff happens. You can't go reacting to the stuff by just trying to pass laws to solve everything, because that doesn't work. Of course, when he was trying to clarify it, he clarified it with example. For instance, if some kid drowns, you don't go and pass a law that you have to put fences around pools. And then, of course, people pointed out that he did that. He did that, yes. Exactly that. A kid almost drowned, and then he signed a law that did exactly that. So it's kind of weird that he used that as an example. Yeah,
wait a minute. What is he, losing his marbles? I mean, that's exactly, in the state of Florida, you cannot have a pool without a fence.
Yes.
And that's right. He signed the law.
Anyway.
And by the way, that works.
By the way.
The fence?
Yes, it does. Very much. As a matter of fact, one of the things about the fence is that for you to have an approved, like, your insurance company approved a safe, it's got to have this, like, this latch thing that is a bar that sticks out that only an adult can reach and, like, pull it up in order to open the fence from the top. It works very well, by the way. I've seen the kids. They've tried to open it. Can't get it. You know, works very well.
Until the adult leaves it open.
Oh, no. The doors need to automatically close as well.
Yeah, you know that adults are blocking them and doing other things. But anyway.
It works. The system works very well.
When used as instructed.
It works very well. It works very well. I mean, can you defeat everything? Yes, it can defeat everything. But I will tell you that in actual regular practice, most adults are not that stupid to try to block it to leave it open.
Have drowning deaths in pools gone down since that law was passed in Florida?
Substantially, yes.
There you go. Anyway. I don't have any other things specifically on any candidates. You have anything else to say about these races?
No. I think we go and, like, try to do some lightning stuff. Since apparently you figured out that we have, like, subjects that are dated to, like, a lot of them. Or not. I don't know. We've gone, I don't know. How long have we gone?
I was going to suggest skipping the lightning round. We've gone long enough.
Oh, okay. Well, we can skip.
If you want to do one, I'm happy to do one. We can keep on going. Maybe we can do like two or three things
okay.
Let's do a quick lightning round. We'll do a few rounds, and we'll stick to 2 minutes per topic. We'll be back after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes. You heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at ablesmay@ablesmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, we are back for a relatively short lightning round. We'll see how many we do.
So for the start of the lightning round, since I didn't have, I was looking through my old subjects because we had gone through almost everything on my list earlier. So did we mention like about a month ago that the military didn't take over like Texas?
Jade Elm?
Yep. That it's over and apparently we didn't impose martial law. Or we didn't, because my understanding is that they kept thinking that we were going to take over land what? That I can't.
Yvonne, you may not have noticed. But yeah. We did annex Texas. It is part of the United States.
Oh, it is part of the U.S. already. Yeah.
It has been for a while.
It has been for a while, but apparently some Texans didn't realize this. So that we didn't need to invade it again because, you know,
because we were already there.
Yeah.
Yes, nothing
happened
out of Jade Helm. Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted.
There was also apparently some kind of apocalypse this week. Did it already happen?
I guess we're all dead.
Yeah, or maybe it's next week. I don't know. There's some one of these wacky religious groups who's saying the end of the world is nigh.
Listen, all of us that are listening to this will die. It just may not be under the apocalypse that these guys are predicting.
Okay, let me pick a couple topics. A few weeks ago now, we never talked about this since, there have been additional confirmation about Apple working on their car. What do you think?
I think it's like a toy thing. I think it's just like some... I honestly think it's... They... Look, they've been working with car makers right now on technology, okay? They have been embedding some of the stuff. I think that... I don't know. I honestly see it more some kind of like a test bed or something like that. I don't know. I still find it hard to believe they're going to build a car. But on the other hand, if they decided to do it, they got so much freaking money anyway that, you know what, whatever. If they decided to build a fucking car, they can afford it.
We got Apple building a car. We got Google building a car. Of course, we've got Tesla doing all their stuff, and they're talking about their self-driving cars, too, coming out, and they're working towards their lower-priced cars. We've got the traditional industry making moves as well, although there's a very different approach. The Apples and Googles seem to be jumping straight towards, we want the fully automated car, blah, 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 whereas the traditional industry is like, hey, let's just keep making smarter and smarter cars that have, you know... You know, they're incrementally moving towards those that still have the driver at the center. We're essentially just making cruise control plus that gets smarter.
Well,
I mean,
10 years ago, like we've had like active cruise control and other things and whatnot. Look, the driverless car is still some way off. I mean, but I'm not going to say it's like 50 years away. I'm going to say it's 10 years away.
Yeah. And a lot of these companies are saying more like 5, but we'll see.
I don't think 5 is, and in large part, the main reason is because there's so many other cars with drivers out there. I mean, look, there's so much money invested in the car with drivers. I mean, that inventory isn't going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and you got all kinds of regulatory hurdles and other stuff to get past as well.
I will tell you that this is going to be kind of like the progress that happened in aircraft. Okay, which is a good example. Look, aircraft, it starting in the 1970s, became that they could almost fly, take off, and land by themselves. But the reality of it was that because of regulatory things, because other aircraft were not equipped like that, because not all airports were enabled in a way that worked, the features could be used by the pilot a lot of times, but it didn't mean that the pilot went away. Okay.
I think you're going to see things move much faster in the car space than they did in the airplane space.
I also think the value here,
like I am not interested at all in the technologies that help automate things 90% of the time. Cause if you're automating 90% of the time, I still have to pay attention. Like there's a big leap there.
The problem. I don't think that we're going to get past that 90% until the fleet of vehicles overall changes all of them. And that's not going to happen in 5 years.
I don't think you have to, because what like Google is working on specifically is anticipates having the humans out there too and coexisting with them.
And I will tell you that I think that they are going to listen, that technology, even in 5 years, cannot completely anticipate. Listen, will not be as wanted to be there yet.
I think five years is aggressive.
Exactly. That's what I said, because you said 5 years. If you give me 10 to 15, then I would say yes. Because the thing is that the main way to get that to happen, which is one of the things that I know that wanted to be passed into law in the U.S. that I heard somebody propose, was that cars needed to have transponders to be able to send information to other cars so other cars could know what is happening in order to be anticipatory.
That's extra helpful. It's not necessary.
I'm sorry. I think that I disagree with you. I don't think that you're going to get to a moment where people can be just like completely comfortable and just sitting in a car until almost all the cars out there have that technology on board.
I don't think you need that at all, because you only need to get to the point where it's safer than a human being driving it.
I don't think that's going to pass the smell test. I think what I'm saying is, listen, here's the thing. You're telling me to a moment that it's totally autonomous and you don't have to worry about it. What I'm going to tell you is that the reality is that it's not going to get to the point that you can really do that until there's enough –
It's not just the other cars. You have to deal with pedestrians. You have to deal with bicycles. You have to deal with animals.
Yes.
The machines have to be smart enough that they can't – if they have to rely on a signal from the other car, that's not good enough anyway. What if the other car's system is broken? They have to be smart enough to adapt without
you think that doesn't happen in the air? A couple of mid-air collisions have happened over the last 20 years because that system has been broken on one plane.
Well, but that's the thing. These systems are not being built with that requirement in mind.
I'm going to tell you this right now. 5 years is not going to be enough. Maybe 10 years will be to the place where you can get that you're comfortable, but you still have to pay plenty of attention. And I'm telling you, the reality is that you know what you're saying, that people, pedestrians, or whatever, dude, we're all fucking carrying smartphones, smart this, smart that, whatever.
Yeah, you're.
What the? Give me a fucking break.
The you're deer tell aren't.
Me, yeah, well, but that, but that's. That's
but the, these are the problems that they're solving right now. Like the addition of knowing where all those things are because they're all reporting into a network. Awesome bonus. That makes it better. They cannot design it with that as a core requirement. And the proof of concepts they've already done in the cities that Google is testing this stuff out on and other people who are doing this don't need it. They do plenty well without it. They're already doing fine. Like, now, I agree. Companies like Google and Tesla are saying 5 years. I don't believe it'll actually be 5 years, but I think it's more like 10. I think it's more like 10. Between 5 and 10, I think, is the magic zone, and you're going to get them first in sort of fleet vehicle type things. But it does not even interest me to have something that'll help me 90% of the time, but I still have to be paying attention to know when to take over. Because to me, that's even more dangerous, because I'm going to get a false sense of security.
I think it's not valuable until I can get into
the car and go to sleep.
No, you see, here's the thing. What's going to happen, which is the best way for this to happen, is for the car to be able to anticipate stuff that happens. So you still have to do it. I'm sorry, you're still gonna have to be driving, but the car is smart enough to stop you from doing something stupid. Okay, that's the first. That's gonna
be.
Well,
we've already
got
cars that stop you from doing things stupid. That's not the interesting part.
They do some things, but it's not all the things that you really want.
Listen,
because you start talking about cars, you're gonna drive me crazy. Listen, cars right now, what they can do, for example, is number one, they'll warn you if you're getting out of a lane.
Yes.
They'll warn you have something in a blind spot. They'll just flash you something at you. They may stop if they sense that an object is ahead of you. They self-stopping. and right. with some reliability.
But what they can't do,
for example, is like right now, if you drive too fast in a corner, they won't stop you from doing that.
Right.
You'll go off.
Look, this is exactly the difference in approaches I was talking about. The car industry is coming at this from the point of view of, let's have a driver. Let's make things easier and easier for them.
Yeah,
let's
but give Sam, them you're more trying tools. To get to 100. And here's the thing. This is the problem. You want to get to 100% autonomous. And what I'm telling you right now is that the problem is that even in 10 years, you're only going to get to 90. You say you want to sit there and not worry about it.
The Google cars are already 100% autonomous.
They're 100% autonomous, and they still say, well, you still may have to watch because there may be situations where you may have to take over.
No. They are only doing that for legal reasons right now. They're not because they have to, and they're still working on it. And with 5 years – this is what I'm saying. The traditional car companies are coming at it from the approach you're saying. Google and the tech companies are coming from it from the opposite approach. They're saying
– right now, Google's overpromising what they can deliver on that.
Maybe
this is what I'm telling you right now. Google's overpromising what they can deliver on that right now. They're talking out of their ass.
I think what's going to happen. My predictions.
I really think that they're way overpromising.
My prediction is the companies that are coming at it from the Google approach, and I don't know if it's going to be Google or if it's going to be somebody else, but the companies that are coming at it from the approach of we are going to build something that does not require a driver. Period. Stop. End of story. That's what they're trying to do. They don't succeed until they achieve that. Will at some point lap the companies who are coming at it from the point of view
What I'm going to tell you right now is that those guys that are promising that right now, they are way overestimating how quickly they can get that to work the way that they believe it is going to work. They're not going to get there. That's what I think. I think they're way overpromising.
I think within 10 years they will be there.
I think it's going to take longer than 10 years. It's going to take longer than 10 years. And I'm going to tell you the main reason why that is. Because there's just going to be millions of cars around those cars that are not that way.
It'll take more than 10 years to get mass adoption, but it'll be less than 10 years till you can buy a car that does that.
Listen, even an aircraft that are 10 times smarter than any of the cars that we have out there right now, okay? It took for the technology to have the infrastructure, to have the airplanes be able to talk to each other, to everything in order to be able to fly autonomous. And what you're telling me is that, oh, no. We're going to build a car right now that, you know what, it's not going to rely on that. It's never going to get an accident, and nothing's going to happen, right?
Less than human accidents. The Google cars already have a safety record better than human drivers.
Listen, but I'm telling you right now, but the problem is that you're not going to get away from the fact that you still have that many factors around. I don't know. Listen, like I said, it's not – but you see, my point is that – there are a lot of situations, and we're not just talking about driving in the United States. We're talking about being able to drive anywhere in the world, okay? Not just here. Off-road, on-road, wherever the hell, whatever.
Will be geographically restricted. My
point is that you're not going to get to something that can go anywhere. It's still going to require some level of human intervention.
No,
it's going to take – listen, I will stake my on ground. Even 10 years from now, the car may be 10 times smarter and be able to avoid you making 90% of the mistakes you could do right now. But fully autonomous, fully 100%, not 10.
I tell you this.
10, yes.
By 2025, it may still be very expensive. It may be very limited in terms of how many people have them. But by 2025, you will be able to buy a car that you can get in, tell it your destination, and go to sleep.
I'm gonna say right now that you are wrong.
Okay.
10 years.
10 years.
And so everybody record this right now. When the hell is it?
October 9th, 2015.
You're wrong.
October 9th, 2025.
Five.
Let's check in. We'll put it in our calendars. There you go. Tell Siri to give you a reminder.
Actually, I'm not going to tell Siri. I'm just going to put it on here. Okay, there you go. All right. 2025. Maybe Apple will be bankrupt by then. Here we go.
And look. And my prediction is, again, it's not necessarily going to be common. It's not going to be like every car.
So you're saying that you will have a car that is legal.
That is available for purchase.
That is available for purchase, where you can just get in the car and just legally fall asleep.
Yes.
And get to your destination. Legal.
Yes. You can tell it where you want to go and then go lie down and fall asleep. And it'll wake you up when you get to where you're going. Okay.
In a bit, but no.
That was way more than 2 minutes. I wanted to get to five of these. Let's do a couple more real quick. The one where that guy who bought a pharmaceutical and then raised the price through the roof and then got a bad flack and then sort of reversed himself. Any thoughts on that guy?
Big weasel. I mean, I don't know what the hell else to say. I mean, I thought it was bizarre, to be honest with you. It's not a common occurrence. I mean, in my experience, that happens. I mean, a drug that is profitable just doesn't get sold like that, and the next person the next company that buys it increases the price by that rate, especially an unestablished drug. I thought it was bizarre.
Well,
to be honest.
And apparently, from what I saw, like, he just did it in a very, very extreme way. There have been examples of people doing that in a much more moderate way, where they increased the price a little bit. But
yeah, but he was, like, nuts. I mean, he increased the price, like, what, from, like, $4 a pill to, like, $700 or something like that. It was something, like, bizarre.
Yeah. Okay, I agree. The guy was an ass. If he'd gotten away with it, no one would have cared. But, like, you know, fundamentally...
It was like an outlier. I mean, it's just not normally. I mean,
it was some esoteric drug that is not needed by that many people, but when the people do need it, they need it, and there is no alternative on the market apparently for it. And so we figured, well, that sounds like a perfect opportunity to just raise the price through the roof.
I guess.
Okay, next. The happy birthday copyright. For generations and generations has passed through from company to company, and it has been actually illegal to sing happy birthday in public without paying royalties. Now, obviously, this is a highly violated thing, but the copyright holders did go after it whenever it was in a notable public place and they found out about it, or, you know, they would go after the royalties for this. And apparently it was finally thrown out in court due to, you know, a technicality of how things were transferred from one owner to another back in the, like, 100 years
ago.
Well,
apparently, because if I remember, the claim had to do something with the fact that apparently the song was some event happened at some point that made it, that it happened before a certain cutoff date, so it could be public domain. And the people who owned the copyright said that wasn't true, and the guys that made the decision say, no, you're wrong, and all of a sudden it came out, well, court decided, nope, they're right. It was public domain, and so there you go. Finally, you can sing happy birthday at no charge.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you. Everett, anybody.
Okay, I'm actually going to do two real quick, and then we're done. There was a report in the New York Times a couple weeks ago about how basically our troops in Afghanistan had been ordered to essentially turn the other way while the situations of essentially child rape were going on. Apparently, it's a thing. Apparently, it's a thing in Afghanistan in certain groups. I don't want to say this generically against everybody in Afghanistan, but apparently in certain groups, it's a thing that, you know, you get a harem of young boys as part of being a significant leader. So they were being asked in some cases, they were recruited people to be like police station chiefs and other things like that. And they'd have this stuff going on, and our troops would see it and know about it and want to do something about it. And in one case, one officer did, and then got punished for having intervened in one of these cases. And in other cases, our troops were basically told, look, it's a cultural thing, turn the other way, we need these guys on our side. And so there was a big expose about this. And, you know, what do I say? And I understand sort of the real politique about, you know, we don't really like any of this, but we want to support these guys because they're fighting with us against those guys. But at a certain point, you have to sort of draw the line and say, you know, there are certain things we can't condone no matter what. And if these guys are doing it, we don't want them on our side, you know? And, and it's a tough situation, but I think it sounds like we made the wrong choice in a number of these cases where we should have been like, no, you know, you're not going to do that and continue to work with us. But
yeah.
Okay. Last thing. And then we'll cut it for this week. I finished, it was kind of a TV show. It was really a movie serial, from, I guess between the world wars, something like the 1930s, something like that. I don't know. Or maybe it was the late 40s. I should look it up, but, Radar Men from the Moon. 1952. So it was after World War II. It was a 12 chapter movie theater serial. So it's one of these things where you would go to the movies and you would watch it. There's like 15 minute episodes. It actually looks like 13 minute episodes where, you know, something would happen, you know. And look, if you're into these 1950s campy sci-fi things, I'm sure it's cool.
But
to me, it just was kind of bad. I mean, it was just stupid. Okay. You know, so look, the basic things of these were like, okay, you got this guy who wears a jetpack and he's got a rocket and he goes to the moon and then he finds bad guys on the moon and then he runs away from the moon and then then that's the end of the episode. There's like some sort of cliffhanger where it looks like he explodes. And then in the next episode, you find out that he actually bailed out right before the plane or the spaceship or whatever exploded and he's fine. And meanwhile, the moon men that he got before are now they're invading Earth. And now they go over here, but they've got these gangsters helping them out. And then there's a car crash, and it looks like people died, and that's the end of the episode. And you know, this just goes on for the 12 episodes. And, you know, there's no, like, sort of ongoing sort of plot that makes sense or characters. It's just these little episodic things where there's some kind of, they run around and they fire lasers at each other or guns or they have car chases.
Lasers
or
are
rocket
good.
Chases.
Lasers are cool.
Yeah, you know, okay. this is the kind of serial adventure thing that, like, you know, of the, you know, Star Wars was sort of intended to, like, be something that took these and made them more modern. But, like, honestly, it was kind of painful to watch. You know, but I watched the 12 episodes. I understand it has some historical significance. And I understand that some people are really into these campy things for the specific reason at laughing at how silly the stuff is. But I sort of could laugh at how silly it was for like one, maybe two of the episodes. But by the time I got to the end of the 12th episode, I was like, okay, God, enough. I get the point. You got the little moon man. You got the little guy with the rockets. You the backpack. Fine, whatever. It's like very repetitive. Same kind of things happening over and over again. And no, unless you are into this kind of 1950s sci-fi, don't bother. Okay, that's it.
Okay, we're done.
We are done. Thank you for joining us. As usual, find us on Facebook. We're Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. And from there, like us, share us, subscribe to the podcast itself so you can listen all the time.
Or on iTunes.
We're on iTunes. Yes, we are on iTunes. Leave reviews on iTunes. There's still, as far as I know, there's still only one review from this Nuovo guy.
Yeah, I don't know who that bastard is. Anyway, yeah. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at I am Bo. And Sam's at Applesme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E.
That's right. There you go. So hey, tell your friends to listen to show two, and we're out of here. Have a great week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.